Good afternoon. Let's try the Boy Scout thing. Always works. Well, welcome everyone. The last session of the day. How are your rears? Yeah. It's like mine. I took off the last session because I needed a break. So, well, welcome. We have the distinct honor to have Alex Brown with us today. He's the manager of the Strategic Planning Office at MSIG USA. He has presented at conferences three times before, so this is his fourth attempt at trying to get it right. But he has done a number of speaking engagements. He has worked with PMI's New Jersey Regional Symposium. He has articles that have appeared in a number of newsletters. And with you, I hope that we're going to get a lot out of this. The title is Strategic Project Management. Please welcome Alex.
Okay, thank you very much for that rousing introduction and for this enormous crowd. Somebody asked me, did I expect this big a crowd? And I said, well, I guess I picked a good title. I've been to a lot of these and I know how tough it is to pick a good topic for you. So let me give you some idea of what it is I'm going to talk about. So if you don't like this, you can get out and make room for someone else to come in, because we're actually a full house here. That's why we're getting started a little early. This is my question for you. We're all project managers here. We all have some kind of idea of what the worst case scenario is for our projects, right? Classic answers to this is your project is over budget, your schedule is missing every deadline, you are not getting the quality, you're not getting the deliverables that you set out to, right? These are your classic project management nightmares. Well, I'll tell you there's something worse. You can have perfect schedule. You can be hitting every budget exactly right, or even under budget. You can deliver great quality. But you know what? If you deliver something your company doesn't need, that's worse. Look at plenty of examples. Microsoft Windows 95. How late was that? If I was the project manager for that, though, I would be bragging about it, right? Because it made sense for the company. What I'm going to talk about here is not so much theory. I'm going to talk a lot about what I've personally experienced. It's essentially a case study. I'm going to tell you about MSIG USA, or Mitsui Sumitomo Insurance Group. I'm going to tell you about what my job is, how I've worked through some issues around uniting strategy with project management. What's unique about my case study compared to what you'd see in a typical conference presentation is we're a relatively small company. Mitsui Sumitomo is a huge insurance conglomerate across the world, over 10,000 employees. But in the U.S., we're about 320 people. So we're relatively small, and that's the environment I'm operating in. So I think it gives some unique insight as to how this can be done, because I've been able to make changes relatively quickly because we're small. We can be nimble in ways that a larger company couldn't be. But at the same time, I can't take this and tell you this is what you need to do with your organization, because most of you are not facing this kind of situation. But I think it'll be an interesting example for you and maybe an inspiration for what you're going through, give you a model, maybe give you an example to point your senior executives to say, look, this worked for a smaller company. We need to adopt a similar model. So if you don't like that, there you go. I want to give you another set of ground rules. If you have a question, please walk up to the mic and ask it. Don't wait for a question and answer period, because I'll keep talking. I love this topic. I've got lots to say on it. Also, I want to take a sense of the room here. I know that I am standing between you and a beer. I or a glass of wine, or a glass of water. But still, it's a party after this. I got the chance to get started about 5 minutes early because they had to close the room. Is there anybody here who wants me to finish up by about 5 o'clock? What I'm going to do is I'll finish up here by 5 o'clock, but I'll be here till 5:30. I'll be at the party after that. I'm more than happy to answer any of your questions, but I'll make sure we get this wrapped up by 5. Well, I'll do the whole thing. The question was, okay, anybody want me to go all the way to 5:15? That answered your question, sir. So, you know, let me start out, give you a background on MSIG and what we do. I'm sure all of your companies at some level buy insurance. You're dealing with property and casualty insurance, insurance for your buildings, insurance for workers' compensation. We sell and offer that type of insurance. We don't do personal life insurance. We don't do homeowners insurance. We're really looking at corporate insurance policies. And because we're wholly owned by our Japanese parent, our main focus is on dealing with those Japanese risks, those Japanese customers who have U.S. operations who need to be covered, they need to be serviced. So we have a very strong relationship with our parent, and our parent drives a lot about what we do and how we operate. Let's see, I also wanted to give you an idea of what I do in the strategic planning office. I am actually the strategic planning office. So you're seeing the whole office that I manage right up here on stage. But it creates some interesting dynamics because, you know, obviously I don't fight with my boss too much. But I am able to have a lot of flexibility. I am able to adapt to a lot of different things going on in the organization and within our corporate parent. That's part of what contributed to a lot of this. And I've been doing this for about 3 years now. Was anybody here in Michelle Theory's program right before this? He just told me that I've had my job for 1 year too long. He says PMOs should generally be shutting down after about 2 years. Well, maybe I'm suggesting some ideas that may continue what he's been talking about, because we've really been taking a strategic direction more than a traditional PMO direction. But we combine a lot of the functions of what a PMO does. So these are the topics that I'm going to run through for you today. First thing I'm going to do is just establish some terms. What's strategic planning? I know we're not a group of strategic planners here, so I want to make sure we get a level set on that. The other thing that I'm going to get into is how does project management complement strategic planning? So for those of you who do have a distinct strategic planning department or a corporate planning department, what do you have to offer them? Why do they want to work with you? Then what I'm going to do is talk about my relationship with the senior managers at MSIG USA. And I think that's going to be interesting to a lot of you because we have a unique organizational structure. And the role that I play is the organizational structure was set up and changed very recently in order to support that. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit more in general about trends that I see, things that are going on in PMI, things that are going on in the project management literature, and how I'm reacting to that given what I think is a pretty unique situation integrating both strategy and projects. And I want to have a question for everybody. Is there anybody here, when I said you got to make sure that your strategy and your projects are together, anybody here feel like they've already got that fixed? If you want to just stand up. I'm going to include me in this, so I'm sitting down. This is very tough stuff. And I think it's kind of at the forefront of what's going on in project management. I hope this will be informative for you. So let's jump into what is strategic planning. If you've ever been to a strategic planning course and you read books on strategic planning, you'll see academics disagree like crazy over this. Typically, strategy is seen as distinct from tactics. There's a sense that it's long-term as opposed to short-term. But when it comes down to giving a really good academic definition of it, you really won't find anything authoritative. Usually, a book on strategy starts out by defining it, but the authors really reflected their own bias and their own way of thinking. So I'm not going to tell you what strategic planning ought to be. I'm going to tell you what it is for us at MSIG, so you know my bias. Now, typically what we're working on in strategic planning is we're really figuring out which projects to launch. It's a fundamentally project-oriented definition of strategy. In fact, when you say, what is the strategic plan in my office, they're not talking about a far-reaching document. They're actually talking about a collection of projects, a report that I put out, a set of projects that have been defined as being strategic projects, and together they make up our plan. So it's a different definition than you probably think of traditionally. So you may need to translate in your head between what you typically hear in the office and what I'm saying here today. So the thing that I do a lot of is figuring out how do we align that list of projects with our long-term plans. And this is unique, I think, among American businesses, certainly. We get plans from our corporate parent in Tokyo that go out to 2010 and further. And we're asked to support and validate and say, how are we going to support those plans? Now, trying to predict out 6-10 years in the future is very tough business. We do that at a very high level, but we make sure that at least tactically we're moving towards them based on our list of active projects. It's a very important part of what I do. So that's really where the alignment issue comes in. It's a key reason that I'm at the company, is to make sure that alignment's there. Another key concept for you is our executive steering committee. And I wrote these slides a while back, and since then the executive steering committee was turned into the executive. They decided committees weren't the way they wanted to do this, so now our chairman and CEO is the one who makes final calls on all these types of things. For the purpose of this discussion, it really doesn't matter. The key thing is that we have a person or a group whose job it is to decide what moves forward and what doesn't. Now, I'm sure some of you are saying, I wish I had that. I've been in a lot of sessions where people would say, oh, I've got a sponsor over here, and two levels up, there's the guy who really makes the decision. This, again, this is a real advantage of having a smaller organization. We can say, it's the chairman, and the chairman's down the hall, and I can ask him a question and say whether something's approved or not. So it's a benefit, again, of being small. And like I said, the strategic plan, it's a collection of projects. It's not a separate document. It's not a theory. It's not a vision. We have a vision. We have a mission. The strategic plan is a collection of projects that drive towards that vision and that mission. And really, the executive steering committee is the ultimate arbiter of what goes into that strategic plan, what gets approved, what doesn't. So right now, what I've been working on lately is a group of projects that fluctuates. At any given time, there's between 15 and 25 projects in our strategic plan. So I'll sit down and monitor those, work with the project managers assigned to them. In some cases, I become the project manager for them because we don't have someone within the organization who's qualified or has time to address a specific project. Almost all of these are cross-departmental. That's one aspect of strategic planning. I'm basically used to deal with the problems of a siloed organization. I'm sure a lot of you guys, I see some heads nodding already, you have operations over here. They only talk to operations people. IT really wants to deal with IT people, maybe one other organization at a time. Whenever something comes up that goes across many organizational groups, I get involved. So a question a lot of people have is, do you just do IT projects? Well, the answer is about half my projects involve IT. None of them are purely IT. And a good half of them come from areas like marketing, our underwriting group, all different business functions, our financial accounting staff. So it crosses a lot of different areas. The key choice here, the key thing that brings something in the strategic plan is that it somehow influences those medium and long-term goals that are given to us at first from Tokyo, further developed by our own staff, and then they create the projects in the strategic plan. All right, so when you want to say what is this strategic planning office, is anybody here from Tokyo or dealt with Tokyo companies, know where the corporate planning office is in Tokyo? All right, so this is a new thing for everybody here. Within a Japanese company, it's very common to have something called a corporate planning office. Now, that will be different from a corporate planning office maybe in a Merrill Lynch that would do strategy and research. Instead, in most of the Tokyo companies, it's essentially a control function. They're going to do forecasts, but they're also going to set benchmarks for their internal staff. And what's interesting is that usually there's no project management associated with that. So what we did in the U.S. to deal with some of the specific issues we had was to essentially meld some parts of what you'd have in a corporate planning environment in Tokyo with a PMO. And we decided to call that a strategic planning office. So that's how we wound up with this function. Some people would say that what I do is project portfolio management. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that because I don't truly make the decisions. I'm not like the way a project manager is to their projects, where they have a lot of authority. I'm in many ways a project portfolio administrator. At the end of the day, all the decisions come from a group of senior executives. My job is really to give good recommendations, to focus people in the organization around strategic issues so that the executives get a good set of proposals that they can then make the final decision on. So maybe I'm putting myself down by saying administrator, but I don't look at that as a negative at all. It's an important thing to administer and to administer well. I also have a training function. I mentor project managers, provide training for them. And I also will audit budgets, schedules, any key project reports. So I'll do master reporting for our executive team. I bring together the status reports from each of the 10 or so project managers out there, assemble them into a single report. We have some red, yellow, green style reports. I put those out for our executive team. And usually if they have a question, I'm the first one they ask. So they see who the project manager is, and they may go to the project manager if they know it's a very specific issue. But if they're just trying to get a sense as to, well, what's going on with this anyway, I'll tend to answer a lot of those questions. This is a partial organization chart. Yeah, we've got a question. Actually, if you could get up to the mic, that would be great.
I cannot shout really well.
You guys here in the back?
Can you guys hear me in the back?
Yeah.
All right, good.
How many project managers do you have to set the context, or do you work with?
We've trained about 40 of the staff in project management techniques. It's not at a PMP level by any stretch of the imagination. It's like a 2 or 3 day training. So we've got that pool of people to pull from, and at any time about 10 people are usually managing that group of about 15 to 25 projects. And I'm including myself in that. So we've got a pool about like that, and it shifts all the time. As projects complete, usually the project manager is no longer managing a project. Usually someone else will take their place with a brand new idea that comes out of a different department. So this is our organization chart, and I'm leaving off 99% of the organization when I draw it this way. But up at the top, we have our CEO and chairman. He's a Japanese gentleman, and he's fundamentally in charge of the U.S. group. Of course, he reports to people back in Tokyo, but I'm not going to illustrate that whole thing. This is really my sphere of influence. Reporting to the CEO is a gentleman who's in charge of the office of the CEO. Imagine he's like a right-hand man to the CEO. It's his job to deal with a lot of different types of issues. I report into the office of the CEO. Now, this is unusual in our company because, for the most part, American staff reports in to the president. He's in the center box. I'm reporting into the Japanese part of the organization. All of my coworkers within the office of the CEO are Japanese. And I'm not to say that they're Japanese Americans, they're Japanese nationals who will rotate back to Tokyo within a few years. So it's an interesting cultural issue. Also parallel to the office of the CEO is the internal audit function. Now what's interesting about this is I used to report to someone within the president's sphere of influence. But we had our internal auditors come in and look at what I did, and they said, this is a fundamental control process. The things that I'm doing, it's a control process. It's a reporting process. If any of you have done SOX reporting, they were looking and saying, well, this is something we could demonstrate as having outside control and independent audit of certain project functions. So part of that helped support the idea that I should be reporting independently of the president in case I need to make a recommendation that would somehow be detrimental to an operations department, an IT department, and so on. And plus, it gives me a little more direct route to the CEO and chairman. And since he wants to watch budgets very closely now, he likes that. I get to watch the budgets for him, at least in that one segment of the organization. All right, so you've gotten a background now. And if anybody has any questions about the organization, feel free to grab the mic, because I'm going to move into some of the more theoretical parts of this. So what I want to do is give you some ideas on how project management and strategic planning really work together, really belong together. And essentially, I've got four key things. And one of these is a topic that Michel really echoed at some point in his presentation. He's talking about strategic planning. He's talking about corporate planning. And he said, these functions come up with the ideas. That's something that you can't say enough about. This is so important. Where do our projects come from? What's making us decide to even begin work on a project? Strategic planning should be giving us that kind of information. It doesn't always. The other thing that's key about project management, and really this is why they belong together so much, is while strategic planning comes up with the ideas, project management can produce the results. And it's a key weakness of many strategic planning methods, that there is no way to audit whether the results are actually done. We have quality control. We have scope control. We have change management. We have all kinds of things that will help us see whether the results were delivered. That discipline isn't necessarily in strategic planning. Another thing, this gets more subtle now, projects actually drive strategic changes. I don't know if any of you guys have worked on a project where at the end of it, you feel like the organization is really different now. We've embarked on some marketing efforts where the organization looked different at the end, not because of odd things that happened externally, but because of the project itself. We knew about different things, and that then influenced our strategy. That's the connection that I see missing in most organizations. And finally, this idea that there should be a feedback loop for continuous change. I'll give you a picture towards the end of this to really show you how there's a cycle to this and how dynamic the relationship between strategy and project management ought to be. So I've tried to create, of course, it's easy for me, I'm creating it within myself. You know, I coordinate these things myself and work with our CEO to get approval for them, so it's easier. But I think in a larger organization, you could do the same thing. So let's take a look at strategic planning and ideas. Now, I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard some of these terms, but I don't know if you've actually sat down and participated in something like a SWOT analysis. SWOT is an idea that comes out of a long history of strategic planning methods. You sit down and you say, what are the strengths of our organization? What are the weaknesses? What are the opportunities? What are the threats? Now, on the face of it, you say, why do you want to collect that information? I mean, what do you do with it? The idea behind the process is once you know your strengths, you know what to build on. You know what to improve. You know what to take advantage of. Your weaknesses are things that you either have to somehow work around or things that you have to work on to make good enough so that you can service your customers properly. Opportunities and threats should be obvious. These are the things that you either want to take advantage of or you want to create risk mitigation plans for. So, these all create project ideas, if it's done right. Has anybody ever sat in on one of these sessions, done a SWOT analysis? Oh, we got a lot of them. How many of you felt like there was really good action that came out of the end of that analysis? All right, that's good. That's about half. That's better than you'd see in most audiences. A lot of times, these SWOT analyses really don't lead to results. Because you have someone who's expert in strategic planning, they walk in, they come up with great ideas, and everybody walks out the door at the end, and it was somebody else's problem to actually do these. Very often the ideas that come out of a strategic planning session are cross-departmental. It's hard for one person to be assigned responsibility for them. You also see other types of analysis that leads to similar results. We did a competitive analysis recently. We went through and said, who else is in our market? What are they really, really, really good at? What are they terrible at? How does that compare to us? We came up with a lot of ideas for things we ought to be doing. Sometimes you may have a company that has clear market share goals. You want to be number one in your market. You want to be the top seller. You want to break into the top 10, whatever it is. That's a great goal. It can be a great vision to motivate people. You also have your vision statements, maybe oriented around even altruistic measures. But the key thing about all this strategy is it's creating ideas, but how are you actually going to get them done? To me, project management is absolutely the answer to this. I was in a strategic planning course once, and we sat down and we talked about all these different techniques and ways to come up with new strategies, new ideas. And they said, well, what happens, to the right of this wonderful diagram that you've created? What happens when we're done with strategy? How do you know it gets done? Where's your measurements? And the instructor said, well, that's not part of this course. As far as I was concerned, though, that was a great answer because I knew project management. I could see how this all would hook together. I just needed his confirmation that he didn't have a better way. So you sit down and you say, how are you going to execute strategy? I haven't found a better way than to create a collection of projects. The biggest problem I see with strategy very often is nobody's hooked up as the responsible party. A group of people get together in a room, they do one of these great brainstorming sessions, nobody is on the hook to actually implement the results. What do we do in our company? We sit down and if somebody brings me a project proposal or an idea, it doesn't get off my desk until we can at least recommend a project manager and a sponsor. I'll occasionally let an idea have two sponsors, I'll never let it have two project managers. So that's just a recipe for disaster. We tried it once, didn't work. You need to have someone in charge. Project management gives you that that follow-through. It gives you that capability to say, this is the person, you. If you don't deliver, I'm going to come back. So this is the kind of thing that you want. And this is the kind of thing strategists want. You can make project management sexy to strategists if you say, you have an idea, I can get it done. This is powerful. If you have a corporate planning department and you can make that case to them, you've shown your value. So what we try to do is avoid having strategy that's never realized or never even attempted. All right, the next thing that I've found is that project management and the projects inevitably create change. So we started a project recently to deal with marketing challenges that we had. We got a team together, we came up with a bunch of ideas, we brainstormed, we did analysis, we did research. All that came out of that project, the only deliverable, was 15 ideas for new projects. Actually, our senior executive loved this. All of a sudden, they have 15 ideas for change that they didn't have before, and they could see the organization in a new way. One of the individuals who was involved in that during the course of the project got promoted to be the chief marketing officer for the company. I don't think that's any coincidence. The fact that he was getting visibility on the project was driving organizational change. It was driving human change. The person personally was learning a lot more about marketing, and it was driving our organization to be different, to act differently, and it gave our executives new ideas. Fundamentally, that was changing our strategy. That was influencing our overall strategy and ideas on what we could do. Sometimes we have projects that completely fail. And obviously this isn't a lot of fun, but I look at one of my key jobs as to actually admitting that the projects fail. So if nobody will admit that the project's done, completed successfully, if nobody will admit that it's failed, I keep it on my list. I've had things on my list for many years. They're not making appreciable progress, but they have to decide. Someone needs to decide, are these failed or are they moving forward? Even the ones that fail are relevant. Usually what happens when a project fails, and they admit that it failed, is it gives us insight. It says, there was a whole host of other opportunities lined up behind it that we should not do. Let's not waste our time on those things. Instead, let's focus on something else. Let's get something more important done, something done we can actually accomplish. It gives us information about our own capabilities. So we get key information, sometimes about our marketplace, sometimes about ourselves, even from the failures. So this is a continuous feedback loop that I've seen. We have our overall strategy. That's kind of our beginning point. We have certain goals we want to achieve. Most of them right now are focused around profit. In the past, they've been focused around revenue. Customer service is always critical. So we have this strategy, and that naturally leads to different ideas. And you can, of course, compare the ideas, make sure they're consistent with the strategy. If they are, if they meet with senior management recommendation, they become projects. As those projects get executed, those projects actually create organizational change. We're different as a result of launching these things, whether it's just something as simple as a new software system or something as complex as a reorganization of our field offices. So what happens, though, is then our strategy immediately gets updated. And if you think about the fact that our strategy, our strategic plan, is the collection of projects, this happens very, very naturally. As soon as a project is completed, it drops off the list. I can say my strategic plan changed. My strategic plan used to have 15 projects, now it has 14. So it's creating this dynamic loop automatically. But this really isn't a closed loop. Strategy is influenced and changed all the time. There's pretty much an annual cycle of changes that come in from Tokyo, and sometimes key strategic issues that come in and influence us at that level from our domestic market, from our regulators. Sarbanes-Oxley, there's been a push to get ourselves involved in Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, even though we don't have to be. So we had a lot of discussions strategically, do we need to budget for SOX? And we said, no, we don't. Tokyo surprised us, and they said, we need this. We may want to list on the New York Stock Exchange someday, who knows? We need to be SOX compliant, and so we've been slowly moving towards that. We also collect ideas from a wide variety of sources. Part of my job is not just working with the CEO, not just collecting ideas from the top of the organization, but working with anybody in the organization who has a good idea. We put our documents, our templates for new project ideas out on our intranet, along with instructions on how to submit them. I go out and do educational sessions for people around the company to say, I want your ideas. Bring them on. Bring them to me, and I'll help you write them up. And if they're a good idea, we'll work with your supervisors to make sure they're appropriate for the department. If they're appropriate for the department and this makes sense, they'll go up to the CEO just as if a senior officer in the firm had come up with the idea. And honestly, some of our best ideas have come from project team members and other people who came up with these kinds of new ideas for things we could do next. All right, so next thing I want to give you some ideas on. It's one thing to talk about project strategy and theoretically how it will interact with the projects. What you need to really make this a part of your organization is some idea as to when you can insert strategy into your projects or when you can reach out to your strategic planners and pull them into the project management ideas. What are those key events that let you tie them together? These are the four that I see that are most key. Project startup, project closure, budget and resource authorization. And when any situation where you have resource conflicts, where the senior managers need to set priority. And finally, if there's any sort of organizational crisis, And I think probably a lot of you guys have been involved in creating PMOs at some point as a response to organizational crisis. I think some of that has to do with these strategic links. There's a lot of similarities there. We'll get to that later. So let's take a look at Project Startup. If you're looking at project management, what does project management let you do really well? Well, using the analogy of a ladder, I feel like project management is the kind of thing that lets you climb a ladder really well, really efficiently. You can keep on top of what you're doing, make sure things are sequenced properly, make sure everything's under control, and climb that ladder really quickly. But what you don't want to do is wind up climbing a ladder really quickly, but leaning against the wrong wall. That's where the strategy comes in. When you're coming and you're working to say, what's a new project we should start up? You're always going to have a choice. You're going to have infinite choices, really, because you could start any project at that point. You may have resources like people and money. They provide some kinds of constraints. But the number of ideas you could harness, the number of things you could address, are almost limitless. How do you decide what to start up first? I don't have a better answer than your organizational strategy. I think that's something you've got to come back to. The other thing that you'll find if you work with a strategic planner is this is the stage of the project where they most want to work with you. Why? Well, let's say that they come up with a strategy, and it means that they have to abandon, you know, millions of dollars worth of in-progress projects. That's not good. Strategic planners are a lot like us. When we go in and we say we have to stop a project, anybody like doing that? I hate doing that. It's terrible when you have to go in and say, this money is just sunk, spent money. There's nothing we can do with it. We have to abandon it. What they want to do is they want to be participating in the execution of strategy right at the beginning, before any money's been spent, before we have sunk costs. That's the start of the project. That's when you can get the most mileage out of your work with the strategic planners. So, strategy is there to help you to say, why are we doing this? What's the goal? What are the objectives? But you as a project manager can really pick those up and say, how are we going to do it? On what schedule? For what cost? That's the relationship I think you want to build with your strategic planners. Now, this is one that may be more surprising to people, to say project closure. Why is project closure useful in a strategic situation? We figure we've just achieved the objectives, and if we did our job well, then this was well aligned with our strategic goals. So you'd think, well, it's over now. What I've discovered is I get my best ideas for new project ideas from the post-project reviews. If you've done a post-project review and you focused on, well, why did we achieve a schedule result? Or why were we over or under our budget? I would ask you the next time you go and do a post-project review to ask questions that look beyond that, that say, what did you see while you were working on that project? What problems did you see in our organization that we really should be addressing? What are the list of rejected scope changes, the things that you really wanted to do but you didn't have time or budget? Those are a tremendous source of new project ideas. It's very rare. I've never seen a strategist, a strategic planner, who has good contacts within their project managers to really know what's coming out of their post-project reviews. And yet, the project team has been working so in-depth on a specific area of the organization. They've been working so in-depth with a specific customer or customer group. They have insights into what the organization ought to be doing that they may not all be done. They may not all be great ideas, but they are certainly worth considering. And they all can have good influence on a more complete, more realistic strategic plan. So if you collect this kind of information when you do your project wrap-up, you will absolutely be giving a gift to your strategic planners. And you probably will have to go and give it to them. They're not going to come and ask for it. But if you can show it to them and it's useful and it's relevant and it does have a strategic flavor to it, They will love you for it. Next thing that we see strategy playing in on is budget and resource authorization. Basically, the reason for this is as long as you have plenty of budget, you don't need to make a lot of strategic choices. You just keep doing things, right? You can always come up with a new project idea if there's always money and resources to get it done. What use is strategy? You just keep doing things. Strategy really comes into play when you have to make those tough choices. Say, I can only do one of these four. Which one is it going to be? What I do in MSIG is I'll tend to assemble lots of different projects. And we don't tend to see large groups of conflict. We tend to see within a network of two or three projects having really serious conflicts with each other. But we'll sit down and do some analysis and say, what's the impact? We essentially redo the business case for each of the projects. We assume that any money spent up until now, it's sunk cost. There's nothing we can do about any of them. But moving forward, what would the cost be for each of the two or three projects? Moving forward, what would the benefits be? And what's the implication of delaying the benefits? Because usually it's a schedule issue. Usually it's a resource issue. Usually we can overcome even budget issues if we give ourselves enough time, if we can push something into the following fiscal year. But what would happen? What benefits would we lose? So we kind of do a scenario-based look at the cost-benefit analysis for each of the projects that are in conflict. And it's absolutely a strategic decision. We need to go back as we're doing that and say, not only what measures of benefit can we produce here, but what measures of benefit are relevant given our strategic goals at the time. Sometimes our company goals have changed somewhat since when we did the original business analysis and original approval. It's very interesting stuff. So the other thing that this really helps with, and you could get into a whole fraud aspect of this. I think Steve Rollins' book on SOX provides some excellent examples of situations where putting in good control around prioritization and authorization, it eliminates pet projects. Because if something doesn't support our strategic goals, why would we do it? If we're able to authorize everything that comes before the group, there's really not going to be any benefit to that kind of analysis. But as long as there's a little bit of scarcity, as long as there's not quite enough budget to do all of them, the pet projects are going to tend to be sacrificed. And that can do good things for you in areas of governance, SOX compliance, and so on. It can also be good for fraud prevention, because it's very often it's easy to put fraud into a pet project much more easily than one that's more visible. All right, so the next thing, of course, is project prioritization. If we have a group of projects, we need to decide which goes first, which goes second, which goes third. A very similar set of analysis and questions as when we're dealing with the budget approvals. We have to decide, what is this really worth doing? We have to decide business case. We have to compare those business cases. And usually, this is a curious thing, usually as we're doing the project justifications, we also wind up reevaluating our corporate strategy. A lot of times our CEO will come through and we'll put a project in front of him and I'll give him a recommendation and say, based on our stated vision and so on, I think this is what we ought to do. I think this project should be number one, the other should be number two. And he'll tell me things have changed. And I'll go and update strategy documents. I'll go and update medium and long-term plans based on that challenge. Based on the fact that this decision that he had to make made him clarify his strategy for me. So there's a powerful interaction going on here. The other thing, of course, is times of crisis. And I've seen this in a couple of PMO books. I think Selling Project Management to Senior Executives mentioned this as well. A great time to introduce project management practices is when the organization is in crisis and somehow you offer relief through project management or through a PMO. That's a way that can be very appealing to a strategic, to a senior manager, someone in the president, CEO, other C-level position. Well, what happens I found is that the strategic planning group gets, they have problems very similar to those of the president, CEO, and other C-level executives. As soon as one of these crisis of directions comes through, they have to reassess what is going on in the organization right now. What can we do to react to this new situation? And, you know, what are they going to do? What is the new strategy? It's a tremendously uncertain time for them. They may appear as if they're in charge of it all. There's a lot of times the personalities I've seen who do strategic planning, they have a lot of authority. They have a lot of tools to analyze. But usually they're very low on information in these situations. They've got a lot of information about how we used to do things, but maybe not so much about how things are going forward. You can be a friend to them in this time of change, because you as a project manager are in touch with some of the most up-to-date trends in your industry, in your project, in your organization, and you know all the costs of the in-progress projects. And you can probably help them say which of these projects can be salvaged and sent in a slightly different direction that will support some new goals, that will somehow address the new issues. If you can forge that partnership with your strategist, what happens is, essentially, you and the strategist have a nice backroom conversation about how things are going and this key information that you both desperately need. Let's face it, you need advance warning about their strategies as much as they need your intelligence of what's going on the ground. Then they come out publicly with a strategy, and it's automatically in line with what you were already thinking in terms of your project plans. You can't get better cooperation than that. To me, that's an ideal you want to think about working towards. All right, now I want to give you some thoughts on how we get senior management involved. And this is a question I get a lot. Essentially, people want to know, how did I wind up reporting to the chairman and CEO through that office of the CEO group? How did I wind up being like an internal audit function? What we did is I very purposely said, Tokyo makes us do certain things. Tokyo needs certain information. That means my chairman needs to provide that. And I found ways to provide that information to him. Also, I found that before I was brought into the organization, there were real problems around decision making. Either executives were left out of the loop, or executives got conflicting messages, or executives would make a decision, but nobody knew what those decisions were. So I tried to help with some issues like that. Finally, I do a heck of a lot of training. Training is a wonderful thing to reinforce. And I just find all sorts of ways, I'll give you a whole list of them, ways to stay in front of your senior executives in a useful way. All right, so the key thing that I did is I sat down and said, oh, here, we've got a question.
Hi, I just want to back you up for a second. So how'd you get there in the first place? Like, this makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm working with a 300-person company, and they don't have either a strategic planning office or a PMO, and so we're looking at an assessment, and so I'm kind of looking for how did we get you there in the first spot?
That's a good question. So how did I get there in the first spot? I guess I have that evil thing, that deus ex machina, the thing that brought me out of the stage was, of course, a consultant. So they had a management consultant come in, look at their problem. But the management consultant really did an excellent job. This was before some of these studies had been done on how you sell to the senior executives. And essentially what he did is he came in and he said, you're having problems making decisions. You're having problems making decisions stick. You're having problems with accountability. The project management approach can solve all of those. And then he interjected the corporate planning function, which he understood from Tokyo, and said, this person can help fill some of that role as well. And because we're a small organization, we couldn't support a separate corporate planning function. I mean, back in Tokyo, I think it's a 75-person department. Obviously, I can't do all of what they do, but at least I can do a part of it. I hope that helps. Does that help answer the question?
So they created a job position and then
they created a job description, and they were looking for someone who was an experienced project manager, someone who knew insurance. and I happened to be working literally across the street in another insurance company doing project management. And friends of friends, you know how that works. There's a lot of shared staff between the two companies, and I wound up making the move over there. All right, so let's see. All right, so the key thing that I saw that I could help with, I could really bring value to, is this issue of the medium and long-term plan. In the past, this was done by a boss of mine. He would sit down and come up with these high-level plans, and it was hard to see how they'd relate. And Tokyo, I don't think they're pretty smart. They would ask us for reports that said, okay, you've given us the high level, now show us the specifics. What are you doing right now, and how does that support these medium and long-term goals? Well, I realized that my list of projects, if I structured it right, if I put it in good language, language that was easily translatable into Japanese, and if I worked very closely with our Japanese representatives, I could answer those questions for them. Essentially, what this has meant is that at least once a year, they're coming to me saying, okay, we have the latest report, and I have about a half a dozen questions for you. Can you get us this extra information in addition? Now, the organization is working in such a way that it's hard for them to produce this kind of information without my function. Now, it may sound like I'm trying to give myself a full-time job until I'm, you know, 6 feet under, but this is important to do. You have to understand your value to the organization. If I can make it easier for my bosses to report to Tokyo, that's tremendously valuable. What we've also seen is that project management has really become kind of an ordinary way of doing business. We had a rotation happen where a different chairman and CEO was brought in from Tokyo. Our old one returned. So we've been through a change of administration. We've had a new president since this has gone in. And the new chairman and CEO had the opportunity to watch everything for a couple of weeks before the transition was complete. And after that period, he sat down and he asked me how he should go about authorizing projects. Because he saw this was so much a part of the way we did business. People would talk about it in the hallways. People knew that if they wanted money for a project, they really ought to come and ask Alex, because he's got a way to do that. Even if they don't understand it, they know that I'm an important person they're going to talk to for this. So it's very powerful. Without the budget, if I didn't have control of the budget, this would be much more difficult to really make stick. And don't even ask me how that happened, because as far as I'm concerned, that was just a lot of good luck and a lot of good arguments at just the right time by a lot of very smart people, including our finance department. We really won the finance department over on that. And that took several months to do. All right, the other thing that we've got is decision making. Now, this is a key thing. When you're talking to senior managers, there's a kind of a fallacy out there. Senior managers are not smart. Senior managers cannot understand long explanations. I've got news for you. They can understand long explanations. They will not listen to long explanations. They don't have time. What I've gotten very good at is taking some very disorganized, very abstract problems and ideas that project managers bring to me, and I distill it down to something that is a clear decision with clear consequences. I'm sure you've had many team members come to you and say, I've got a problem. And you look at them and you listen for a while about the problem, and you realize they haven't said anything about the consequences. They haven't said anything about what your options are. I mean, I don't let issues like that get off my desk. I make sure that there are consequences and there are options before they get off my desk, because I know from experience that's what my senior management team needs. They need decisions, they need options. I may give them an early warning that there's an issue before I have all the options. Certainly if it's going to take me a while, I'll do that. But I'm not going to bring it to them for decisions until there's a decision to be made, because I'm wasting their time. So I save them time. In the past, a lot of those things got to their desk. I watched it happen. And I've done my best to insert myself in between them. All right, the next thing, project management training. We trained about 10% of our staff. So out of a group of, out of a group of about 400, we're now down to about 320, so we're actually over 10%. We've trained a good 40 people. So project management is now something that a lot of people know. If somebody doesn't know project management, they know somebody who is in the training. So that's powerful in making this central. You also find that a lot of our managers are now project managers or sponsors, so it's working within the rest of the organization pretty thoroughly. Also, we get constant reinforcement. I'm putting reports out on our intranet on a regular basis. I'm going out and talking to people one-on-one at their desks. Every time there's a budget planning going on near the end of the year or a replanning going on in the middle of the year, I'm going out and asking all the heads of all the departments, what's going on, what projects do you need, how do we adjust our plans to sync with yours. So you need that constant reinforcement. And the other thing, and I really strongly recommend this, a lot of times you'll be reluctant to go to senior managers for approval of something or go to them to make sure that they understand it. Get in their office. If you're not in their office, it's very hard for them to see your value. Be valuable, obviously, when you go to their office, because otherwise it's not going to work. But if you're never in their office, that's a different kind of problem. All right. So I'm going to go real quick through this stuff, and then you guys will get off to your beers and wines and so on. Project management maturity models, standards and books, the PMI goals and marketing, I think these are all reinforcing these issues of strategy. We just saw in the agenda for this Congress, I think there are four or five different sessions. They're basically about strategy, but different versions, different insights into this same types of topics. This is something that's important for us. This is part of the growth of project management. If we're going to achieve those PMI goals of being essential for business results, we've got to embrace strategy. We've got to be relevant to strategy. We need to learn how to work with our senior decision makers. I will throw in one caveat, though. I think that if you look at the project management literature right now, there's been an extreme focus on issues of prioritization. I went through the project portfolio management standard, and I counted the number of times there was like priority or select. About 70 instances of those words and phrases. New projects, how do we come up with a new project? About 10 instances. When you actually read them, the new projects, they're only described in the standard as to how do you select and prioritize them. I don't think that's enough. You know, strategy is about coming up with the ideas. Strategy is not about new project proposals. You have to answer the question, where do the new project proposals come from? I think they should come from our desks. We can't rely on our strategists to come up and make them that concrete, make them that specific. So that's my thoughts on this. I do want to leave you with one thought, though. Let me just jump this over. All right, my challenge to you is you take this stuff home and you think about how can you bring more strategy into your job? How can you reinforce this kind of link? Maybe this example can help you just by being something that you can show to your management and say, look how this is working. And here's a project manager who's reporting up into the CEO. He's avoiding the president so that he can provide an audit function. Maybe you'll find other examples like that. I also want you to think about what you have the power to change. I wasn't the CEO, but I've made some changes in how the organization functions. The only way I was able to make that is by talking to my peers, talking to people within the organization with whom I have influence, and saying, I can help you. Let's work together on this. And then the CEO seeing things like that and saying, let's reorganize around these kinds of things. Who do you have influence over? Who do you have influence over who's in this? And who could you maybe meet, get to know, so that you gain the influence needed to make project management more strategic in your company? Finally, are your projects currently strategically aligned? If they're not, why not? Because of the regulations issues coming in from SOX and so on, you may actually be looking at jail time, people in your organization. I mean, it's funny at one level, but it's a serious issue for your CFO. You should have seen our CFO when he got the news that Tokyo wanted us to be SOX compliant. He started imagining the striped or orange jumpsuits that he might be wearing. You've got to figure out, is your stuff strategically aligned? If not, why not? And that's going to give you an idea on things you might be able to change. So hopefully this is giving you some good ideas. Hopefully this is going to be useful for you. And I'll certainly take questions for a couple of minutes, but if anybody wants to go, go. We hit time. Oh, and do fill out the forms. It's ADV07. I really do take that stuff seriously. It helps me a lot as a speaker. 09? Oh, well, I'm not good with numbers. ADV09.
So just a question on, a couple of questions on challenges.
Yeah.
I actually come from a 1,000-person organization and started 2 years ago with a PMO, and then they decided this year to throw strategic planning at me, so I'm now a one-person planning organization with project management office. And it sounds like I do, I mean, I have an identical job in a financial institution, small credit union. My biggest challenges to do this, aside from all the behavioral issues I have with change, is span of control and time horizon. So span of control meaning I run an enterprise-wide PMO, so we do projects from the HR department, IT department, marketing department.
Yeah.
So how do you define what a project is when you're trying to achieve strategic goals would be the first question, because sometimes they're not projects that require PM.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we really struggled with was How do you say what's in the strategic plan, what's out of the strategic plan? And I had to work with our senior management team, and they came up with a definition. I threw a lot of ideas at them. And I guess if we have something that's really small, I'm willing to accept almost anyone as a project manager on that. They may not have even been trained, but I'll work with them and say, okay, you're accountable for this. And we eliminate some of the paperwork that I typically require.
So you do more than just track, like prioritize those projects. You actually have someone act in that role.
Yeah. But we assign it to somebody because otherwise it gets lost in the shuffle.
And the second question is the planning horizon. Because I work with a lot of senior managers that are forced to do a one-year planning horizon, and all their strategic objectives or strategic projects and initiatives are aligned to that one-year planning horizon. And then I work with an executive team that does a five-year planning horizon. And it's very difficult to link the two.
Yeah.
Do you have that type of challenge or?
The only way I've been able to work that out is we have things that we're doing now that we can plan out for a given period of time. Some go out 2 years, but most are within a year. So we have that more tactical plan. And what I tend to do is just create a list of things that we plan to begin after those are done. So that may take us out for like a 2-year plan. Usually beyond 2 years, though, we're just putting together an overview of what we plan to accomplish and bulleted lists of either business objectives or specific projects with names and so on. It depends on the nature of the plan, what's the best way to express that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Hi, good presentation, by the way.
Oh,
just to preface my question, I work for a Fortune 100 financial services firm. And I think a lot of us realize the importance of linking strategy to execution. And a lot of times what we see missing as that this important linkage, it's pretty obvious to align projects to your strategic plan. But as you drill down into the objectives, just I guess a question for you, do you have any frameworks that really quantifies how the project aligns to each objective so you can really look at, you know, where the gaps are, where as you overlay the project process matrix, understand where the gaps are, where you're focusing maybe too much time, you know, based on a particular objective. Just kind of more of a quantitative model behind that, because that's something that I really haven't seen, but I think a lot of us are trying to work towards.
Yeah, if you want to do the quantitative stuff, you'll find some vendors out on the floor that do the bubble charts and different ways of balancing and organizing a portfolio. personally, I tried working with some of that with our senior managers, and they just weren't interested.
Okay.
They wanted to know what regulation is this making us comply with, or what is this going to help us with? Is it in marketing? Is it in customer satisfaction? And to try and come up with a scoring system or anything along those lines, they just weren't interested.
Sure.
They felt like the explanations were more helpful.
Yeah, because sometimes the CFO wants more of a kind of a number-driven reasoning behind, well, specifically, can you, you know, be a little more quantitative in terms of how each particular objective is being supported by our processes and projects?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we do is we're doing a lot more business cases. I'm going to put up a slide. If you look, Gary Hurkin's Business Savvy Project Manager has a lot of good things that would probably satisfy your CFO. What's the cost-benefit analysis? What's net present value? What's the payback period?
Well, yeah.
And we look for stuff like that very often in a business justification for a project. And Dinsmore and Cook Davis, The Right Project's Done Right, also has some of that type of information as well.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Two quick questions. I actually...
Thank you.
Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. So I was interested in, you were talking about tools and that you don't really use tools, but you do business cases. So,
right.
There must be cases where the general KPI doesn't really work, like your key performance indicators.
Right.
And that you have to say this is of extreme strategic value. Have you ever run into these types of situations?
Yeah, sure. The most common situation like that where we really don't rely a lot on numeric indicators are regulatory issues.
How about a customer that you just can't say no to?
Yeah, that's another thing. We have certain customers that are customers going back to the Tokyo office. If Tokyo tells us we absolutely have to do a set of services for that customer, there's really no choice because they own us.
So you just document that as part of the reason why you're doing it, or?
Yeah, if you went through our business justification, there's going to be a section on costs, there's going to be a section on financial benefits, and there's a section on non-financial benefits. Sometimes there can be nothing in the financial benefits, but there's something overriding in the non-financial benefits, and we go ahead with it.
Okay. And the second question I have is, how often do you review your plan with the CEO and change over? You said crisis will initiate sort of an interrupted meeting, something to start it. But what is a typical plan process for you?
I would say we're typically authorizing, I would say if 2 months go by without a new project, that's very rare. Sometimes we're authorizing as many as 3 projects a month. There's an overall review of this that always happens during budgeting time.
Okay.
And very often we have a rebudget in the middle of the year. So usually there's a big overview, I'd say twice a year.
Okay.
And there's a good dozen projects being authorized midway through. And all that becomes a review with the CEO because he has to authorize it.
Okay, so when you do these reviews,
mm-hmm.
do you drop projects to take on new ones? And
we have.
Yeah?
Yeah, we tend not to drop them. We tend to delay them.
Okay.
That's been a common situation.
This is really excellent presentation.
Oh, thank you. I have
one quick question. We are part of the security organization in our company, and we as the PM, the PM of security, we drive a lot of security-related projects which are, you know, entire company is impacted. And as you said, you know, a lot of times our team comes up with ideas, it goes to execs, and then it comes back to us as a project. So they are definitely, you know, in strategic alignment. But the biggest challenge we face is there's a lot of pushback, a lot of resistance from the entire company as to run this project. So we as a PM, we are pulled in two different directions. On one side, we have senior management, constant pressure of, you know, getting it delivered with quality and timelines and all of that. Whereas on the other hand, you know, we have lots of pushback and resistance. And it's very difficult to convince them what's the goal and why it is strategically important. So do you have any guidelines on that?
Yeah, that's the issue, that where you fall in the organization can be very important to things like that. I have the luxury of going and saying when a new proposal comes in, if somebody says it doesn't look like a good idea, I say Ted authorized it. Ted's our CEO. If Ted says it should be done, there's nobody who can really argue with that in the U.S. So that makes it relatively easy. There definitely are situations, though, where I'm not getting the compliance that I need from project managers, and I'm investigating some things like, well, could I be participating in performance reviews, maybe as a second manager for certain people, because I need their day-to-day help so much? Because I can't pull Ted out all the time and say, Ted, make this person work for me. I need more subtle ways, too. But it's very hard. It is very, very hard to do that, particularly if the structure of the organization doesn't give you somebody like the Ted to come in and help you.
It's especially hard when, you know, you are working with peers might be a little bit easy, but when working with senior management from other organizations is a little difficult when you don't have an authority or kind of formal authority also.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question.
Talk about a little bit your formal project selection processes. In other words, how is it that you're making the decisions? Do these projects fit your strategic plan or not? And second of all, what research would support this to scale to a much larger organization with a much heavier project workload than what you're talking about here?
Yeah, I'll answer the second part first. The research to support the scaling up, there is none. I don't know if this would. The one thing that I think will scale up is those fundamental benefits that you could provide as a project manager to a strategic planning office, or to a corporate planning office, or other strategic planning office. That would scale up. I'm almost certain of that. But that's my opinion. In terms of how we formally come up with our project plans, we do have a process, a procedure for how we authorize new projects. And we will review a document and compare it to our currently stated vision. But most of that procedure is about who gets the document and whose signatures are needed before it becomes authorized and part of the strategic plan. It heavily revolves around our personnel, around our president, our CEO, and other key staff members. It's not something where we're comparing documents very often. It's one where we're getting opinions and decisions from key people.
Sure. My question is a little bit different. I know you talked about how your projects get prioritized. Do you have criteria, and do you kill projects?
Well, we don't have formal criteria for killing projects, although I have written it into the procedures that, you know, if it looks dead, my job is to bring it to senior management for a decision as to whether this should actually be killed. We thought about things like killing a project based on certain periods of inactivity, but we found that there are situations where projects will almost go into hibernation on purpose for a while we're collecting metrics or waiting for something to happen that can reauthorize it. So we never really came up with a definition that was concrete that we could put in a procedure. So it's similar in many ways to the project authorization. It's my job to identify the issue and then to bring it to the senior managers to make the final call. But I'll make recommendations to kill them.
Thank you. I enjoyed your presentation.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, please.
Hi. Great presentation.
Thank you.
You said you'd been in this role about 3 years, is that right?
Yep.
Not to put you on the spot, but can you verify that there's been an improvement in organizational performance since these two levels of the organization have been connected in this way?
It will be tough because I was brought in shortly after a merger of the Mitsui and the Sumitomo groups. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of chaos going on around that. So the organization was in flux.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can point to is just to say that I could point to like internal audit reports that mm-hmm. show a certain level of internal control.
Mm-hmm.
I could point to the fact that we survived a change of administration coming mm-hmm. in from Tokyo. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't point in and say underwriting results are up by X percent.
Yeah.
I will tell you that my budget has gone down every year, and I consider that an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the order of 50%. Now, I think I'm spent about half as much money as I was authorized to this year. And that's great. That's going to contribute to our profit this year.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I'm presenting on a topic very similar to this tomorrow morning. I hope you'll show up so I can point you out to people.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. I'll still be up here for a little bit, but why don't we all get to the event. And if anybody wants to exchange business cards, feel free to come on up.